So our next presentation will be waterborne transmission of Shigella sonii at a state park in New Jersey in 2012, and will be presented by Miranda Chan, who is from the New Jersey Department of Health.
Good afternoon. Today I'll be presenting an outbreak investigation entitled Waterborne Transmission of Shigella sonii at State Park in New Jersey in 2012. I'll be presenting this outbreak from the perspective of how the investigation unfolded. And so I'll start out with some background information, talk about our methods, our investigation findings, and then conclude with some recommendations. So at this time, I was an applied epidemiology fellow that was sponsored by the CDC and the Council for State and Territorial Epidemiologists, or CSTE, so I'd like to acknowledge their support. I have no financial disclosures. So on the evening of June 24th, 2012, an emergency department physician contacted our after-hours line at the New Jersey Department of Health to report two unrelated families evaluated for diarrheal illness. The two families had no apparent connections except that both had reported visiting State Park A a few days prior to their hospital visit. The initial stool specimens were reported as positive for Cryptosporidium and Giardia, which would have eliminated the lake at the state park as a potential exposure and source of the outbreak. However, this was an error in laboratory reporting. The samples were later confirmed to be positive for Shigella sonii, and with our local health department partners, we launched an investigation to identify additional cases and to determine potential infection sources and implement controls. Shigellosis causes diarrhea, often bloody, fever, stomach cramping, and vomiting. The disease is caused by the bacterial genus Shigella, which includes the species Shigella sonii, which is often associated with developed countries. The disease is highly contagious and transmitted through the fecal-oral route, and is often associated with foodborne outbreaks. The incubation period is usually 1 to 3 days, with a range of 12 to 96 hours. And according to the CDC, 14,000 cases are reported yearly in the U.S. However, the true number is likely 20 times higher due to underreporting. State Park A contains 20,000 acres of land, which includes nearly 200 campsites and cabins. Each cabin contains a small septic tank and septic field used to treat the wastewater, as the park is not connected to any city sewage lines. The lake at the park draws many visitors, highlighted in this map. It provides boating activities and has a designated swimming area complex, which includes a concession stand serving food. The bathrooms in the swimming area complex are also treated by a large septic system, which includes flush toilets. The park also offers drinking water, showers for campers, and flush toilets. So now I'll talk about the methods used in this outbreak investigation. To investigate this outbreak, we assessed the park facilities focusing on the swimming and the surrounding lake areas due to our initial reports that the families participated in lake activities. We created a targeted questionnaire used to interview our case patients. We reviewed cases of gastrointestinal illness in our state surveillance system to acquire more cases. We also interviewed state park staff and utilized laboratory testing for clinical specimens and our water samples. For additional case finding of out-of-state visitors, we posted a report on EpiX, which is a secure online communication for state and national public health agencies. The outbreak case definitions focus on four areas. First was GI illness, which was defined as gastrointestinal illness that included diarrhea, fever, cramping, and vomiting. And this had occurred within 12 to 72 hours of reporting exposure to the lake at State Park A between June 19th through the 22nd. As a laboratory component, most of our cases also had an isolation of Shigella sonii from a clinical sample and or pulse field electrophoresis or PFG matched to one of the three patterns that were associated with this outbreak. And our fourth characteristic was an epi-link or epidemiological link, which is defined as cases linked to a confirmed case with illness onset at least one incubation period after the onset of the first case. So we had three case types. The first was confirmed. Confirmed cases had GI illness with lake exposure and a positive lab. Our probable cases had GI illness with also with lake exposure. And our secondary cases had GI illness epi-linked to a confirmed case. So now I'll start with our investigation findings and start with our environmental inspection. So based on reports from our initial cases, all had participated in lake activities at the state park. So we focused our environmental inspection in the swimming beach complex, highlighted in red in this map. We started by inspecting the food concession stand, highlighted here. So of course our goal was to determine what was exposure that caused illness in these cases and to implement appropriate measures. So we first asked, could this potentially be a foodborne outbreak? We inspected the park's one concession stand, which was staffed by one worker. The worker cooked a limited number of food items on the grill and deep fryer. She also prepared flavored water ice and sold bags of ice for coolers and for consumption. However, a few violations were noted, including bare hand contact with the ice machine, which was ordered to be emptied and cleaned. However, initial case interviews did not implicate the concession stand or any items sold, including ice, as most brought food and drinks from home and sources outside the park. Next, we looked at the large septic system. Could the septic system be leaking, causing contamination? Wastewater from the bathrooms in the swimming area complex was treated by a large septic system as the park was not serviced by city sewage. The wastewater flowed from the bathrooms to a large septic tank, which was located far from the lake in a grass area between the women's bathroom and the parking lot. As the tank filled up, a septic pump drained the wastewater to the septic field, which was located over 100 yards away from the septic tank. There was no evidence of septic system failure or leaking. Also, no recent power outages were reported around the time of the outbreak that would have caused the septic pump to fail. Next, we looked at the drinking water. Potable water sources of the park included water that was supplied to the concession stand, the drinking fountains, and the showers. There's no evidence of contamination of the potable water. The water was sampled on June 29, 2012, after cases were identified, which yielded no bacterial growth or zero colonies per 100 milliliters in four of the sampled areas. Well, could this outbreak be related to the lake? Initial cases reported swim in the lake a few days prior to illness onset. The lake at State Park A is an artificially constructed lake with a small designated swimming area. The swimming area is fairly shallow, about 4 to 5 feet deep in the deepest swimmable area. So this picture depicts the swimming area, which is roped off into three sections. The main middle section is first open to swimmers. When approximately 180 swimmers are in the water, the sections on the left and right are open to accommodate the additional number of swimmers. In accordance to the New Jersey regulations for recreation bathing facilities, lake water is sampled once weekly in three areas of the lake. In the week before and the week after the initial cases were reported, the lake passed for total fecal coliforms with a standard of less than 200 colony-forming units, or CFUS. Given all this information, We did not have a particular source that was implicated. However, our targeted questionnaire and clinical laboratory findings gave us a few more clues. Using a targeted questionnaire developed by the State Health Department and adapted from the CDC, our local health department partners interviewed cases. The questionnaire focused on questions related to water exposures, which included the lake, showers, potable water, and ice. We also had questions regarding food exposures, including food from the concession stand, food brought in from home, or particular grocery stores. We also contacted our New Jersey State Public Health Laboratory to perform pulse field electrophoresis, or PFGE analysis, on specific isolates of Shigella, as this is not routinely performed in New Jersey. We had 11 cases who reported we had 11 cases who completed the targeted questionnaire. The majority of people brought food from home and did not purchase concession items. So this made it unlikely that the food or drinking water from the park was the source of the outbreak. Data obtained from the survey supported the theory that exposure to the lake water was the source of the outbreak, as all those interviewed reported exposure to the lake. Specifically, 11 waded or played in the pool, and many also had been splashed in the face or put their face in the water. There are 3 PFG patterns associated with this outbreak listed on the slide. According to CDC's PulseNet, a national laboratory-based surveillance database, these patterns are fairly common among Shigella isolates and make interpretation of PFGE difficult. In consultation with the CDC, they reported that it is common to see more than one PFG pattern associated with an outbreak. So cases that are epi-linked to an outbreak but have a different PFGE pattern should still be considered a case. However, cases matching one of the 3 PFG patterns but not meeting the case definition, such as lake exposure or an epi-link, are not counted as an outbreak case. Because of the fairly common patterns of Shigella, we did not find PFGE analysis useful in this investigation. An image of one of the PFG gels is shown on the left. We have 3 marker or size marker lanes. And one of the patterns is shown here, ending in 0405, and our most common pattern in purple in 1058. So this is the epidemic curve for this outbreak. We have the number of cases on the vertical axis plotted by the date of illness onset on the horizontal axis. There are 12 confirmed cases in yellow, and 13 probable cases in green. And they're concentrated mostly within 4 days, except for one case that had illness onset on June 18th. Unfortunately, we had limited information on this case, but we did know that they were a clinically confirmed case and had a clinical isolate matching one of the PFG patterns. And the case also had family members who swam in the lake and were also ill. No out-of-state cases were reported. The age ranges of the cases were 2 to 33 years, with a median of 8 years old. So most of the cases were children, and 68% of them were male. So given all this information, let's return back to the park. Again, based on our interviews and our questionnaire, most people swam in the lake, and that was a common exposure. However, the lake water samples taken the week before and the week after did not indicate ongoing contamination of the lake. The park documents and staff interviews provided more information. Based on lifeguard logs, this graph displays the number of swimmers in the lake on the vertical axis. At each time of day on the horizontal axis for Monday, June 18th, through June 22nd. Additionally, recorded afternoon air temperatures are displayed for each day below the graph. So as a reminder, our initial cases were reported on Saturday, June 24th, indicated by that arrow. On June 18th through the 19th, at the beginning of the week, the weather was cool and overcast, and only a small number of people visited the park and swam. Additionally, on June 18th, the lake water was routinely sampled and passed testing for total fecal coliforms. However, on Wednesday, June 20th, the weather became much warmer and humid, and the number of people who visited the park and swam in the lake dramatically increased. As you can see by the peak, there were almost 400 people swimming in the lake on June 20th at 2 p.m. The lifeguard logs and interviews also noted that they were short-staffed and therefore could not open additional swimming areas to allow swimmers to spread out. Therefore, the large number of swimmers were confined to the one main section. The same staff shortages continued on Thursday, June 21st. On Friday, June 22nd, there were some swimmers in the lake in the morning, but the lake was later closed due to lightning and thunderstorms. So again, the lake was sampled on Monday, June 18th, and later again sampled the following Monday on June 26th. However, the water contamination, likely due to the crowding of swimmers, occurred in the middle of the week and was then mitigated by the washout from the thunderstorm and related closure at the end of the week. Because of this timing, the water samples did not test positive for total fecal coliforms. This Shigella outbreak was likely caused by fecal contamination of the lake by swimmers. A high volume of swimmers were confined to a small area, likely facilitated disease transmission, which was then interrupted by the lake's weather-related closure. The swimming area was shallow and poorly circulated, as the lake was an artificially man-made lake. There are no cases that were reported illness onsets after this closure, coinciding with a case count drop-off. Investigation findings ruled out septic system breaches, contamination of potable water sources, and also food from the concession stand. This outbreak highlights the importance of recognizing recreational waterborne illness and promoting appropriate measures to limit and prevent such illnesses. Our investigation had several limitations, and to note a few, case finding was difficult as the lack of records limited information on State Part A and attendees and many out-of-state visitors. PFG patterns for Shigella are difficult to interpret, since multiple patterns are seen within a cluster of Shigella, are often seen in outbreaks. Additionally, many state public health laboratories do not routinely perform PFG analysis on Shigella as they do with other organisms such as Salmonella. Swimmers are an important source of contamination and pathogen transmission. Untreated water venues like lakes lack disinfection and filtration systems, as with pools and spas. Thus, swimmer behavior and hygiene is even more critical to prevent illness. Swimmers, especially children, should wash with soap before entering the water and take frequent bathroom breaks. Swimmers should be made aware of the risk for recreational water-associated illness. Additionally, exclusion policies for all patrons and staff who are ill with diarrhea should be established, implemented, and enforced. As far as environmental measures, monitoring and testing for fecal indicator bacteria can be helpful to assess the risk for water-associated GI illness. And improving circulation of water through beach areas should be explored to reduce the longevity of focal swimmer-derived contamination and thus the risk for pathogen transmission. So I'd like to acknowledge the many people that were working on this outbreak, particularly Rebecca Greeley, who is the waterborne disease coordinator in New Jersey. She did a lot of the work, and I also adapted some of her slides for this talk. I'd also like to acknowledge the funding I got from CSTE at the time. So that's it. Thank you.
Are there any questions from the audience? Sure. If you want to stand up and introduce yourself, please, and then ask your question.
Okay, so I'll repeat the question. So the question is about what? Oh, okay. Well, I'll just shout. I don't know what happened. I broke it. So the question was about what recommendations the state had as far as environmental sampling and testing. Our regulations only require that venues like lakes sample it once weekly during the swimming season, which is typically Memorial Day through sort of Labor Day. So I think it sort of depends on the cost and how flexible and how much resources that venue has, because testing is pretty costly. So, and we also only test for fecal coliforms, which is an indicator group of bacteria. So we can't test for specific organisms because that's not cost effective and the methodology is not necessarily there. So I think if we knew that there are these high number of visitors maybe during, this was also right before the 4th of July and it was really hot, maybe we would consider testing more frequently. But I think the main point of my talk was, in addition to the environmental sampling, which is very critical, it was the fact that they didn't have enough staff at the lake, and everyone was crammed into this one shallow area, which was tiny, kind of a tiny pool. And so if the area was larger for its swimmers to spread out, and also the fact that it was a man-made lake, that there isn't that natural circulation of the lake water that would help disperse the pathogen. So it's kind of a multiple prong approach, I think, to implement, of course, and educate swimmers about the risk for diseases when you enter and swim in a lake or in a pool for that matter. But the environmental testing is obviously consistently there because it's enforced by our regulations.